Paul Life Sciences is preparing to leave Washtenaw County. Back in 1997, Paul Life Sciences bought out what was then Gelman Sciences. While under the Gelman moniker, the facility on South Wagner Road in Scioto Township was leaking the suspected carcinogen 1,4-dioxane into the groundwater. The contamination plume spread into portions of the Ann Arbor water supply, and varying levels of remediation have been underway ever since. Now that Paul Life Sciences is making plans to leave the area, where does that leave remediation and the health of local water? Good morning, I'm David Fair, and this is Issues of the Environment on 89.1 WEMU. Our guest today is going to try and help us find some answers. Mike Gebhardt is a hydrogeologist and former environmental analyst at the Washtenaw County Department of Environmental Health. And to provide some context to our conversation, Mike, I guess we should probably first start by briefly reviewing how we got into this situation. And thank you for being here, by the way.
You're welcome.
Between 1976 and 1985, Gelman Sciences sprayed wastewater on the lawns and unlined lagoons on its property. That wastewater contained 1,4-dioxane. The chemical began spreading through the soil and on into the groundwater, and even though the company stopped spraying the contaminated wastewater in this fashion in 1986, we are still dealing with the effects today. So, Mike, with that in mind, how widespread did the contamination plume eventually grow?
At the moment, it's about 3 miles long, depending on where you start and where you finish, and it's gone in a number of directions. There's a plume that goes to the northwest, away from the Paul's facility on Wagner Road, and then there's a couple of plumes that have gone to the northeast and turning as they get towards Maple Road into the Ann Arbor area, it's believed. There's some concern about which way the plume is going to go after that, because there's less wells and less investigation.
So the plume is still expanding?
The plume is still expanding. I mean, that's one of your first geologic textbooks is Earth Dynamic System. It's always moving. So there is enough plume, and because it's a 3 mile long plume, there's a lot of source material that can continue to migrate on. It's believed it'll ultimately vent to the Huron River in some location that's yet to be determined, but that still needs to be verified.
For reasons that are beyond me, government regulation stipulates that there is a certain amount of the chemical allowed in water, levels at which the government deems the contamination safe for human health and consumption. And right now, that's at 85 parts per billion, which is higher than it used to be. How high did contamination levels get in some of these affected areas?
Well, even as of recently, we've seen up to 50,000 parts per billion in various wells at the site, and that's only a couple of years ago.
And can't use those wells.
No, these were monitoring wells, so they were not in residential wells. But at various wells across the site, there's been up to 200,000 parts per million in the groundwater, and then in the millions of parts per million in per billion in the soil. So the various components, and then there are a few residential wells that have had detectable concentrations that have been monitored, and they're aware of the concentrations, and currently, because it's below the 85, there's not a lot of options for them.
Now, I mentioned in the outset that 1,4-dioxane is a suspected carcinogen. Do we have any tangible evidence whatsoever that human health has been impacted at all as a result of this contamination plume?
Not necessarily within the Ann Arbor area, but there are have been exposures to 1,4-dioxane that have impacted people's health, either through job exposure or other. That's part of what the toxicologists use to evaluate the chemical. It's still possible that there have been exposure in the communities. We're just not aware of them, and people haven't made the connection between the groundwater and the actual chemical, but we haven't identified them.
Remediation efforts have been an ongoing process. Before selling to Paul Life Sciences, Gelman fought remediation hard in the court system. When Paul Life Sciences took ownership of the property, it did so with an agreement to continue and complete the remediation. We're now a quarter of a century down the road, and we're still talking about it. How much progress really has been made?
They've removed a lot of the mass, but that's only one component of the remediation kind of goals. We want to remove the mass, so it's not in the system, but we also need to meet target criteria for drinking water purposes and for other exposure criteria. There's what's called a groundwater surface water interface criteria, so that's where the plume actually vents to the river. It has to meet a standard there. Both of these standards have been in consideration for review, both by regulations that Granholm signed and put into place, and also
Were extended by Governor Snyder.
Were extended by Governor Snyder. They expect to have those done by the end of this year, which would give us a new criteria for a variety of media, might say. That
unless challenged and altered in the courts yet again.
Correct.
This is Issues of the Environment on 89.1 WEMU, and I'm David Fair. My guest this morning is Mike Gebhardt, and Mike is the hydrogeologist and a former environmental analyst at the Washtenaw County Department of Environmental Health. We're talking about the ongoing remediation efforts of Paul Life Sciences, which is responsible for cleanup and remediation of 1,4-dioxane contamination that spread into local groundwater from the property it purchased from Gelman Sciences back in 1997. Well, here we are in 2013, Mike, and Paul Life Sciences is planning and leaving this summer. There are a whole lot of people worried the departure of the company will mean an end to its commitment to get this mess cleaned up. Do you share those concerns?
Not necessarily. I mean, they've got an infrastructure in place. They have the ability to actually sell the property and maintain that remediation infrastructure to continue to address the plume. They've set aside, there's made financial assurances with the DEQ and the consent agreement that this is under, basically. It's a legal case at this point, to have the infrastructure in place to keep the remediation going. So while Paul's footprint can leave, the remediation footprint is actually will be staying in place. So, and the DEQ is an obligation and to continue to monitor and observe their actions.
Is this process being inhibited by the fact that the funding for the DEQ and its ability to monitor and enforce regulation has been dramatically altered over the past decade?
It does limit their resources to address the problem and to keep an ever vigilant eye. I mean, it takes a critical review of data to, you know, understand what's happening in such, especially in such a large site. It's massive in scale.
So what's it going to take to get the job done?
I mean, right now they have a combination of extraction of groundwater, but they're also implementing what are called institutional controls. In this case, the court ordered a prohibition zone to minimize the impact or exposure to groundwater that people have when they're drinking. That was recently expanded to include an area along Dexter Ann Arbor Road between M14 and Maple Road. So one of their components is this institutional control that allows the groundwater to expand at a higher concentration than if they were to be extracting it out. And part of their remedial plan is to utilize additional institutional control, such as deed restrictions, on the area around the Paul facility that will ultimately allow them to reduce pumping even further. They have to demonstrate that it's not going to be expanding beyond a footprint that they've decided for compliance wells, but that's still yet to be seen how they'll meet that.
Can we get to a place where you and I sit down and have a conversation and said, the job is done? It has been remediated.
It's going to be some distance down the road. Because of the footprint of the plume and the properties of 1,4-dioxane, it's referred to as recalcitrant. It doesn't readily break down naturally in the groundwater through biological actions. It does dilute and disperse like any other chemical, but it's a recalcitrant compound. It doesn't break down in groundwater. So once it's in the water, it's pretty much going to go wherever that groundwater flow naturally is.
Well, obviously, we've touched on some rather major things and can only get into so much detail in our limited amount of time together. Where can we get more information about the plume, the contamination, and the remediation process?
There's several places. The DEQ maintains a website that has a lot of the recent data, not all the data. Sybil Colon, the project manager with the DEQ, is also available for questions. And then there's SIO Residents for Safe Water, which is a local community group that maintains a Google Earth mashups of the data as well as other reviews, and Coalition for Action and Remediation of Dioxane, kind of the local community groups and the local units of government's resource for this site.
Mike, thank you so much for your time and for the information. I appreciate it.
All right, no problem.
That is Mike Gebhardt. He is a hydrogeologist and former environmental analyst at the Washtenaw County Department of Environmental Health. I'm David Fair, and you've been listening to another installment of Issues of the Environment. It's a regular Wednesday feature during Morning Edition, and it's only on 89.1 WEMU.